Hey guys, welcome to the Tech Point Africa podcast. My name is Muiwa.
I'm Oluwani Femi.
My name is Oganeromo.
And I'm Abiodun Bolu.
Bolu forgot his name. Is it because you've not been on the podcast for a while that you forgot your name?
I guess. That must be why.
Welcome back, Bolu.
Welcome, Bolu. Yeah. Welcome back.
Thanks.
Bolu had to be away for a while. It was related to the whole...
By the way,
you guys have not updated listeners on the house.
Yeah, notes. You might have noticed in my voice that I'm excited. From the last episode, I'm excited and, well, I stopped ranting for a while because I got a house.
Finally.
Everybody, we all got a place, got places that we like, and the struggle is over. It is over.
Finally, right? finally. But I mean, like they say, problem need to finish.
Right.
So right now there's a problem in yeah, it's mostly a Nigerian problem. So the whole issue with national
identity numbers, number.
And people's SIM cards being blocked.
Right. Crazy for the first stuff. Time in how many years? That like 2 years now. You've been postponing deadlines
since December 2020.
Right. Wow. Mm-hmm. You keep postponing by 3 months, by a month, and now for the first time, the federal government is going ahead, has gone ahead with their threat of barring any number that is not linked to an NIN. And
they must have postponed for like, I mean,
2 years.
Nine times. I'm sure somebody listening right now is one of those people
who's like called their blog. Be like, what would they do? Is this the first time they are saying they are postponing? And this time they are like, so I think my theory is that to an extent, a lot of people have registered, right? A lot of people has registered, and this barring might not really affect telcos as much as it would if they had started barring lines since 2020.
Mm-hmm.
You get,
yeah.
But now they have gone ahead to bar people's line. Some people can't receive calls, some can't make calls, as some people can't browse.
Mm-hmm.
Either of the problem, at least you are incapacitated to use your mobile number because you've not linked the NIN. And yeah, I and Bolu went to the NIN enrollment office at Ikeja today.
Alausa Ikeja.
We went there today. There was a whole lot of crowd there.
So much.
And people are angry. People are complaining.
Expectedly.
Yes. But sometimes, you know, when you've defaulted, you just be like, okay, I didn't register my NIN. Maybe because the time I came to register, there was a lot of queue and I decided to go. That was aside. And now people that have registered, that have their NIN, they are also there with them in the struggle. Now we got to ask some of them questions. Why? They just said the NIN is inactive. So it is not just about enrolling now, it's about getting your NIN to be active.
So even people that actually enrolled are among the people whose lines were blocked.
Exactly.
Even though these people I'm assuming they attempted to link their numbers to NIN and it didn't work.
Yes, then they called their customer care line, telco customer care line, and they were told that their NIN is inactive, they should go and validate it. Even people that went to MTN offices, Airtel offices, like that, they were told the same thing, that they should go to the enrollment office to go and validate their line. And I was surprised. What is validation? This is the first time I'm hearing about validation. And the only tweet, the only thing you can see on NIMC websites or connected to validation that we can see is very recent as March 22nd, right?
Wow.
So it's a new process. People don't know about validation. All they just know is enroll, get your NIN, and move on. But now you have to.
I never heard of validation.
Neither have I. Yeah. Even people that are there, they were confused. They came with their NIN slip, and you are still blocked. So it's a new process now. So problems are now in different levels. So either you've defaulted and not registered at all, or you've registered.
Did you find out when this validation thing started and why? Because, again, new process, never heard of it.
Yes. So, some people, this is how you find out your, ordinarily, you wouldn't know, but if you went to a bank and they wanted to confirm your NIN, and you give them your NIN and they find out that they can't confirm it, it is inactive, then you go and validate it in an NIN enrollment office. Or if you want to link your SIM and it's telling you your NIN is inactive, right, you have to validate it. So I reasoned, and from a few people that asked questions, I was able to notice the trend. If you registered your NIN with an agent, not from
Nigerians,
NIC
are using
office,
agents for things they can do themselves.
Right. There's actually they have an agent network,
official,
for NIC, official agent network, like enterprises or agents that register on behalf of NIMC.
Okay, but that's from what I've noticed over the years, even for registering SIMs and all of that, I always prefer to go to the offices of these telcos, because when you use all those supposed registered agents in the roadside, there was always a problem.
Yes. So as it's where their data is not updated on the on NIMC database, so they have to go and do it.
But even telcos can register, like can enroll you for NIN.
Yes, so they were given the power.
So what's the problem?
But still, they are directing people to NIN enrollment office. So either you did that, registered with an agent, or you are at some point you had to retrieve your line, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it deactivates at that point.
After retrieving the line.
Yes. And you have to go and validate it again. So there are a lot of things involved there.
The tech behind this is not similar. It's
okay.
Like,
maybe you probably have to link the line again after you retrieve it.
Yes. And interestingly, there's a solution to that. Is if you have an NIMC app.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And not only that, if the number you registered with is active. So if you have an NIMC app and you don't know the number you used to register, or you can't find it again, or you can't access it, then there's nothing you can do aside going to join the queue in those offices.
Okay, so this solution you are preferring now is for people who
have NIMC app. You can get it on the Play Store.
Okay.
Yes. And you know the number you used to register your NIN phone number is accessible, because they will send you an OTP.
Okay, so you can use that to validate.
Yes.
You don't have to queue. People are queuing all over now.
Yes. Oh. So after you download the NIMC app, you find two NIMC app on the Play Store. You find one for ID verification, and you find one for enterprise.
Okay.
That is what is used by agents.
Mm-hmm.
So you download the one that is for ID registration. When you download it and you open it, you follow the prompts until it leads you to where you will put in your NIN. When you put in your NIN, it will take you to another interface where it asks you to confirm your number.
Mm-hmm.
It will display a few digits of your phone number. It will ask you that, is that the number you're still using? If you say yes, you click it and it will send you an OTP, which you will enter, and it will tell you your NIN has been validated.
That's perfect. So no need to go and queue.
But how many people know about NIMC?
But,
exactly.
But this is even for people who have not enrolled at all. They still have to go and queue.
Yes, they still have to go and queue.
Okay.
But if you have enrolled and you are having issue with your NIN being inactive, then you can try the NIMC app. Some people find out later that no phone number is attached to the NIN number.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow, like at the process of registration, there was no number.
So there's no way they can use the app.
So they have to go and queue.
Exactly.
Wow.
This is crazy. I can imagine even the logistics of this for even the NIMC officials and...
Yes, it's tiring. They actually abandoned people today.
Yeah, they
were tired.
Today.
They left people outside. They went into their offices.
Wow.
Yes.
They were flogging people.
Yes.
You got flogged.
I actually got flogged.
Sorry about that.
Yes, an officer of the...
Occupational hazard.
Yes, civil defense. There were a lot of them on ground because they were sharing the same compound.
Yeah.
So they were there to disperse the crowd.
Mm.
And I was trying to
sorry
get
about
word.
That.
Thank you.
Thank you for taking one for the team and for the listeners. So if you are listening, that's the solution. If you heard that Nifemi has given this, I think we have an article...
Yes,
detailing
on the
this.
NIMC
so
app.
We can also link to it so you can follow that.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense. So I forgot, we're going to start with something and I kind of forgot. Again, thanks to everyone that has been listening. And if you're listening right now up to this point, thank you so much. We already have listener mail. You know, at the end of every episode, we always say reach out to us. So someone actually sent an email. His name is Samuel Obina. Samuel Obina, if you're listening now.
Shout out.
So let me just read Samuel Obina from from Ibadan. So he said, I have an idea and I believe I can change Nigeria, in short, Africa. but do not know how to get the idea started. That is about raising money and the rest. I heard you say in the last episode that raising money is more about who you know. That was Chim Gozerim. Some of us here don't know anyone. Please shed more light on this. Interesting. This is my own opinion. I would like to hear from other people. You say you have an idea. So, like, you've not even started. Mm-hmm. I know it tends, and somehow the media has played the role in that. You know, when we announce funding news all the time and all of that, right? There's a tendency to think that that's just the only way you can start a mm-hmm. business. Like, you must raise money.
Raise money, yeah.
Do pre-seed. Yes, we've seen a few people raise money pre-seed these days, and they've not even started the idea and all of that. Which is where the who you know comes around. Mm-hmm. But for most people, these people are just exceptions. For most people, when you have an idea, you've not started, you need to first start, right? Mm-hmm. Anybody that is going to put money into your business,
you have to know that you're serious.
We have to see some traction. So you need to first start with what you have. And then there's what they call FFF, family, friends, and fools. Those are the first people that
invest in you.
Your mother, your father, your uncle, your friend. This will
your family Sajo.
Yeah. They don't put money in the business because they believe in the idea or they've seen your numbers. They just like you and they just... Yeah. So those are actually the first people. So Chim Gozerim's statement of raising money is about who you know still applies to that.
Yeah, yes. Still stands.
Yeah, so you need to find those people that can, you know, put... They just put it because they just believe in you.
They're expecting a return, so...
Yeah, they're not expecting anything from you. So that's the first step. I don't know if anybody has any other thing to add.
I think I agree with you really because most of the startups we've talked to always, most of the time, before they raise money, it's usually family and friends and fools, as you said, would obviously pay, like obviously invest in them. Mm-hmm. If you don't have people like that, well...
Sorry.
Or you have your own money to start.
Yeah, you start with your money too.
Okay, yeah, there's that too. You can start with your own money. That is usually the small business route anyways.
You start with your money.
So and eventually you can keep bootstrapping. Tech Point Africa.
Yeah, exactly.
If not really, then you've been bootstrapping savings. For 7 years.
Yeah. Yes. It all started with Adewale Savings. The photography jobs he did over the weekend, shooting weddings and whatnot. So you start with what you have, and then you move to the 3 Fs, and then maybe. And then from there,
get somebody interested in you.
Yeah.
All the best.
Yeah, all the best. We'll link to an article that explains a bit more of this. I think we have like 2 or 3 articles I have in mind already. We'll link to that in the show notes. Okay, let's move to the next story. Banks. Couple of banks were fined. Nigerian banks.
Yes, about 800 million naira.
800 million.
Oh yes, 800 million.
For dealing with crypto, right?
Yes, for facilitating crypto transactions.
Interesting. I thought it was only individuals.
We have warned you.
Exactly. when I saw that story, what came to my mind was, you know, CBN was not bluffing when they released that circular last year in February. They were not bluffing at all. And, you know, we've seen a lot of news where people would say, even though they banned crypto, things are still happening. You know, at that point, we even saw Bitcoin peer-to-peer trades in Nigeria really soar. You know, that was when Paxful actually announced that peer-to-peer trading in Nigeria had reached $1.5 billion. And that was really amazing. But now, you know, CBN has showed people that we're not joking when we told you we don't want
this
you to facilitate.
This is the week when Nigerian government shows us that.
Yes, yes.
And our threats.
We've been hearing about them freezing individual accounts.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. So this is now banks.
Yes, this is now banks.
That went ahead to accept those payments.
How were they able to trace that the banks?
Okay, yeah. So the 3 banks that were fined were Access Bank, Stanbic, IBTC, and United Bank for Africa. Mm-hmm. So I think... Access Bank had the biggest fine of all, 500 million naira.
How much are these in dollars?
That's like $1.2 million.
Yes. Okay. Stanbic was 200 million naira. I think that's about $428,000.
481.
Yes. And then there was Stanbic UBA, United Bank for Africa. That was 100 million naira, which is...
like $240,000.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah. And Stanbic IBTC CEO actually said some things about how they were actually able to, how CBN was able to find out what exactly happened. His name is Wole Adeniyi.
Okay.
So he said CBN as a technology that is more advanced than what they use. I think that was really, it wasn't really clear. So he said CBN as a technology more advanced than what banks use to like
detect crypto
related transactions. And I think when they say detect crypto related transactions, what they really mean is that if you are transacting, like if I'm sending money to Onome and then I wrote there, okay, this is the money for the Bitcoin you sent me, they will flag it.
Of course.
Which people don't would do. Normally not do.
No, they are smarter than that now.
They said those transactions went through without them detecting it, and CBN was somehow able to detect those transactions.
How was CBN able to detect it?
Like,
I don't understand.
It's still very, but I think I'm still going to do some findings.
Yeah, you need
that.
To. But the banks are not fighting it. They're not saying no.
They are not. What Adeni, the Islamic Bank CEO, is actually saying is, they are talking to CBN to actually release that technology to them so that they'll be able to.
Because so there's track. No time in them.
It sounds like a joke to be.
Yeah.
It is.
They even mentioned that they know that they will still have to pay the money, but CBN should like give them the technology so that.
I think it's being sarcastic.
To be honest, I don't
know. I think it's being sarcastic because. How do they want to track it? From what I understand, most of these peer-to-peer platforms now, they just pair you with someone who has the crypto you need. Mm-hmm. The person
sends you the money.
The description is, there's no description anyway. There's a code and all of that. So yes. How does CBN track?
I really don't, and when you think about it, CBN, like, I think even with this 800 million naira fine and everything, they can't really put a stop to crypto transactions.
Never.
Can't.
They
it's
cannot.
Because I spoke to someone this morning and he still did a crypto related transaction. All he had to do is don't put it in the transaction details.
Don't use the keywords, yeah.
Yes,
as simple as that. And
okay, I have an angle to this or a theory. What if this is just fake news by CBN to just
put fear?
Put fear in people, like signal. Like, hey,
they are watching you.
We can do this.
Do this.
And then make people afraid because it's out of their control.
True,
and nobody's using Inaira, by the way. Nobody's using Inaira.
We are going to give. Bolu is going to like let us know how it's going with Inaira.
Yes, very soon. Yeah, and yeah, I have some inside gist about that. Well, I don't think I want to let the cat out of the bag yet. So
okay.
I think
we're looking forward to it.
Yes, for now you can just subscribe to the Blockchain Explorer.
We'll put a link in the episode notes,
so you know when that article is out, so that you can see the entire gist about Inera and what the update is. But another thing about this is it also points to the fact that the CBN is not really ready to accept crypto per se, and it's really surprising because we are seeing a lot of countries in the international community actually opening up and saying, you know what, we want to understand this thing, how does
even
it work
US.
Yes, and mm-hmm. On Monday we saw the UK decide that they wanted to understand crypto better. In fact, they said they wanted to make the UK a hub for crypto asset technologies, and mm-hmm. from there you start to think, people are really, taking notes of, these international communities are taking notes of cryptocurrencies. They mm-hmm. know it's, and I think one of the things that spurred this was the entire Ukraine-Russia war and how, crypto played a really big role in that. So it's still surprising to me that, our own CBN, is still not, making the move to really understand crypto, regulate crypto, try to harness it. How do we understand it? NFTs. And it's funny again because, I was at a blockchain conference, the TechNext conference, and, a government representative was actually talking about, this technology. And he made some very interesting insights on how, blockchain and crypto NFTs could actually help with getting people to, buy houses easily, invest in real estate easily, when you tokenize real estate.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really interesting. And from there, I was like, maybe we might start to see.
It's not like they don't know how much impact this is capable of having. It's not as if they don't know it. It's just the uncertainties
that's
clouding
the
judgment. They're afraid to get out of hand.
mm-hmm. and there's nothing to regulate about crypto.
There's nothing to regulate
and about.
Governments have to worry about things like terrorism, terrorist acts being funded by
But still, banditry is still being funded with our legal tenders.
The funny thing is that fiat, most scams, most criminal
fiat
is still
fiat,
the top.
Exactly.
That's just the truth about it.
So exactly. As long as it's a financial system, there's nothing you can do about it as long as it can be used for transactions.
Maybe try and focus more on the inherent issues, like the root issues, why these things
exactly.
happen, why there's terrorism, why there are bandits,
exactly.
and solve that, you know, stuff like that.
Consider embracing blockchain.
They do, and I hope they do soon, because it's one technology that keeps transforming and keeps changing
exactly.
very fast,
leaving us
very
behind.
Rapidly, and you know. If you and the thing with regulation and anything government related, it's usually slow.
Yeah.
But technology moves fast.
Moves faster,
moves,
yeah.
Moves really fast. So yeah. I just hope, you know, they realize this and, you know, find a way to understand and, you know, help them and help, you know,
people
use these things, you know.
Amen to
make,
that.
Yeah.
Well, so since elections are coming, so maybe the new government might
use it to draw us.
We'll see. Fingers crossed. So we'll put a link to the Blockchain Explorer list so you can subscribe and know the next time Bulu shares a story about that. Okay, so final story for today. It has been trending on social media, especially on Twitter,
yeah.
all week. Apparently, it started months ago, but I don't know why it never came to our fore. So a US-based company, Fast, has shut down.
Yeah,
recently.
So Fast is an online checkout company. What they do is basically they help you check out when you're online.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see the...
Nobody has ever seen their checkouts.
I've never seen it. Although I think they'll probably be in the US, so maybe people that are in the US may see them.
No. I've seen tweets of people in the US saying they've never seen them. I don't know.
Interestingly, according to what I read about the company and all, a lot of merchants refuse to put the Fast button on their... payout on their checkout page. So I think someone conducted like a survey and 19 out of 50 didn't put the checkout, the Fast checkout button on the page. So
interesting.
A lot of people were not using it. But really, apart from the fact that they shut down and all of that, there's the fact that apparently they hired Nigerian developers at the beginning of the company
to build their MVP.
Yeah, to create their MVP and all of that. But they treated them really badly. Horrible bosses part 2.
Wow.
This time.
US edition.
US edition. Part 3. So what he did was, okay, he hired these Nigerian developers and they created the MVPs. And in the end, he didn't give them any credits and he was paying them really badly. I think he paid them $800 a month. About $5 or $6 an hour.
Wow.
Damn.
And then he sacked them when he was
And done. Then he sacked them. Like
after
some people came
money.
online on Slack and they couldn't access the Slack channel anymore.
Like
it was that bad.
So use them for cheap labor. Build the company, raise money, then sack them.
And that's all, you're gone. You can't I think most of them are even scared to even talk. They couldn't say anything. Because of obviously you have to protect your reputation when you come into the industry and all of that. So a lot of them refuse to say anything. I think it wasn't until recently as the whole thing like started blowing up and all that, some people started talking and saying, okay.
I wish they talked earlier. Yeah.
Seriously, I actually saw a tweet from a white lady. I'm still trying to understand if she was actually talking about Nigerian developers or not. But it happened about 2021, she was complaining that Fast did one of her friends dirty and he was supposed to be hired or something. He came on board and within 2 weeks or so, they let him go without any explanations and whatsoever. And interestingly, this is not the first time the CEO has been founder of a failed startup. So in 2014, he founded Tow. It's a towing, an on-demand towing truck company that connects tow trucks to companies that want to tow their tow trucks, basically. So after he got a contract with the police department, I think he sued them because they're owing him money.
Mm.
Okay.
He sued them because they're owing him money. Eventually, he wasn't able to get back his money, I think, because the details of the case are really, really sketchy. But sued them. Then after suing them, he threatened to give out personal information of people.
Wow.
Like, I was like, dude, just who offended you? Just to get his money.
The guy seems to have a lot of no scruples. That's the word. Exactly. No scruples.
Like, it was so bad. It was so bad. And some of the people that he owed money, he still owes them money to today.
The Nigerian developers?
No, the Nigerian developers, even the people from his old company, he still owes them
money. And he raised so much money.
That's what I found really surprising. I think as at the last time they raised money, the company was valued at $580 million.
Yep.
And I think they erased about over $100
million. $120 million.
And they could not pay people properly.
It's so surprising.
And now the company has shut down. They're burning $300 million a year or something.
Yes,
$10 million every month.
$10 million every month on $600,000 revenue a year. How?
Anyways, like, what concerns me in all of this is the kind of image this part where he hired low-cost Nigerian developers. The kind of image is painting of the many talents that we have in Nigeria representing Africa at large.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just hoping it does not give out a bad image of Nigerian developers, as it's where I don't agree that Nigerian developers are low cost or cheap. I don't agree.
I can relate because trust me, they are not cheap.
Yes, they are not cheap.
They are not.
So the kind of image, and I think I should just chip in that we are trying to get an idea of how much an African developer or a Nigerian developer gets paid monthly or annually. And we will put the link to the form if you're a developer, either you work for a Nigerian company or you work remotely for a company outside the country. Just fill the form, give us an idea. Yeah. Let us put it out so that people will stop negotiating with you like they are buying pepper in the market.
Exactly.
Like that's so ridiculous.
$800 monthly.
Exactly.
How does that make
sense? To give some context to that, you know, we did the survey in
2017. Mm-hmm.
And that time, the numbers at that time, it reflects the numbers at that time. But it's very important to do that updated one so that there's a kind of like a benchmark that people can have, this is the average that Nigerian and African developers
exactly.
And don't think that they are cheap. Because they are good, they are good. One of the best in the world.
We're exporting talent.
We have developers in fan companies like Google, Amazon, Microsoft. So obviously,
we're
good enough. Cheap.
So please, developers listening, please, we'll put a link to that in the episode notes. Very important. Please help us fill in the survey. Honestly, it's anonymous, I believe.
Yes, anonymous.
It's anonymous. So, but just fill it honestly, and then we'll do the rest of the magic.
Right.
One other thing is just quickly before we go, like, what does this say? I saw a tweet. Someone was talking about how everything that happens in this country, people blame the government, and then wondering like, what's government's role in this? Should they have? If government had better labor laws and whatnot,
It's always labor laws.
I don't know exactly if it's because this is remote. Yeah. I don't know exactly if it's government's.
How labor laws.
I don't know how labor laws for remote work in other countries.
Yeah.
And how government plays a role, but maybe that's something we should explore. What role government can play?
Yeah.
You know, we need to explore
in the
that.
Gig economy.
Yeah. Exactly. So yeah, thanks so much for staying with us all this while, and we try to make sure that things, because we noticed that our episodes can tend to be long, so we try to make things more standard. We're hoping that you can expect that episodes will be below 35 minutes going forward, and we hope that you can stick with us. Thank you for staying this long, Samuel Obina. I hope we were able to answer your question with a bit of help. If you want to ask us any question like Samuel Obina, you can email us at podcast@techpoint.africa. You could also send feedback or comments or whatever it is, contribute to the discussion. You can also tweet at us or just tweet your ideas and share with the hashtag TechPointsAfricaPodcast. Don't forget, we'll put all the links to all the episodes and all the articles and all the forms and the surveys that we mentioned in this episode and in the description or episode show notes. Thank you for sticking with us. We'll catch you next Tuesday.
Right.
And what else? Anything else? Am I forgetting anything?
Take care of yourself.
Yeah.
Register
have a good
your
weekend.
N9.
Yeah.
Bye.
Have a good weekend. Goodbye.
Bye. Yeah, bye.